This is episode 7 of Encounter Points. Welcome to the 7th episode of Encounter Points. I'm Ken Hellenius.
And I'm Bill Schmidt.
In the last episode, we shared a couple notes about music. See what I did there?
Yeah.
Notes, music, anyone?
Huh? Yeah.
Anyway, it was a great conversation, and I'm really looking forward to this week's conversation.
Yeah, Ken, this entire set of conversations is about joy, as you know. And so far, we've talked about humor, trust, mercy, and truth. These are all topics that can be very cerebral, very in your brain, as it were. It's time we bring this discussion around to something more practical.
You mean like maybe something we could see and touch and perhaps in that interaction experience joy? Like when I see something that's beautiful, it makes my heart glad?
What a beautiful idea. Let's get to the conversation. Hello, Ken. Good to see you again.
It's beautiful to have you here.
Thank you very much. And it is beautiful. Why don't we even talk more about that?
Well, that's a good idea. You know, so tonight, let us discuss one more of the aspects of joy.
Yes.
Which is, you know, we've kind of started in chatting about the transcendentals a bit.
Right.
We've talked about goodness. We've talked about truth. It's time that we talk about beauty.
Yeah, beauty is a transcendental, right?
Now, I got to confess something to you right now.
Fair enough.
I've studied philosophy. I don't know that I truly grasp what transcendentals are.
You know, it's a very good point. It's probably a term that was used maybe by Aristotle and carried on in limited follow-ups from his philosophy or one of the philosophers. I actually adopted it from conversations that I heard on TV with Bob Spitzer, Father Robert Spitzer.
Oh, yeah. Our esteemed podcasting colleague,
yeah,
Father Robert Spitzer.
Indeed, yes. And he has conversations on EWTN every week that are just remarkable. And he truly is a great philosopher and great student of philosophy. And he uses the terms, and he seems to limit them. Limit the list to maybe 3 or 4, and I think it is love, truth, beauty. Basically, he's saying that these are the things that human beings instinctively long for, and yet they know that the completeness of those things is not to be found on Earth. So the question is, well, how did humans cultivate a taste for ever more beauty?
Sure, where does the desire for these
right, if it doesn't exist somewhere.
Sure.
And it's truly in that God-sized hole in our soul that can only be filled with God by the transcendent, right?
How Augustinian of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I do love that saying, yes.
Yeah, no. Our hearts are restless,
until they rest in thee.
The God-shaped hole in the heart. Yeah, these are all kind of echoes of the same desire. Well,
yes.
You know, as I was contemplating, thinking about, actually meditating upon beauty, didn't quite reach the heights of contemplation.
Oh, then you didn't reach that transcendence that we were
aiming. I did not
for.
Transcend our earthly existence as I was doing my research. But as I was thinking about it, you know, my natural reaction is, of course, to be like, hey, we're talking about the joy of being Catholic. Let's go to the source book for Catholic teaching. Let's see what the Catechism has to say
about
beauty.
Beautiful. Good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I dive in, and it turns out, of course, beauty is really discussed in the area of art, and especially sacred art.
Right.
And where it falls is paragraphs 2500 to 2503, which are within the explanation and the exploration of the 8th commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness.
Oh, my goodness.
Because beauty is an expression, a human expression of truth.
Oh, I
and
love
truth
it.
Is, of course, what the Eighth Commandment is all about.
Yes.
It's about telling the truth and about being true. So, of course, a few weeks ago, we discussed truth.
Yes.
And kind of explored some parts of that, but we never got to this end bit, which is we didn't get there until now, I should say.
Fair enough, right?
And that is that beauty is related to truth.
Mm-hmm.
Truth itself being one of these other transcendentals.
Yes.
But that, as the Catechism says, the practice of goodness is accompanied by spontaneous spiritual joy and moral beauty. Likewise, truth carries with it the joy and splendor of spiritual beauty.
Hmm.
So it's this idea that things that are true are attractive in and of themselves.
That's yes.
And so that when we express a truth, maybe one that our interlocutor didn't heretofore understand,
right,
and all of a sudden grasps that, there's this moment of joy. I have now realized a new truth that I did not know before that fits into now my worldview. My worldview is expanded because of that. It's a joyful moment, and it's a beautiful moment.
Yes.
So these things all relating. So,
oh, I love that.
I
yes.
like that here in this explanation,
right,
they are specifically linking beauty with joy.
Beauty and joy and truth all go together.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh, that really is interesting. And it helps to explain the quote from the poet, beauty is truth, beauty, and that is all you will know on earth and all you need to know.
All you
am
need
I right?
to know, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's really food for thought that it's so clearly related. I like that.
And I think a lot about this, too, in that beauty, you know, like especially artistic expressions of beauty. And I know we'll discuss art in future weeks, too, mm-hmm. in a future episode. But beauty is really an expression, kind of a human expression, a human form of communication that evokes what can't really be put into words.
Oh, I love that.
When
yes.
something is beautiful, we know that. And we almost can't explain why it's beautiful.
Right.
You know, art critics can put some things into words, but even then, it's not reading a critical review of a piece of art or something beautiful. It does not replace experiencing it yourself.
That's right. Then isn't that a Franciscan saying that to know the name of the rose is not the same thing as to know the rose? You have to experience it.
That's yeah. all. Wow.
I happen to know that only because of the novel and movie.
Which is hilarious because that was the direction I was
is going. That right? Yeah.
And
yes.
Boy, that's actually a novel and a movie that I greatly enjoyed.
Yeah,
they came right when I was just going to college. And so I was right in my formative kind of eye-opening years.
Right.
And of course, there's a rather salacious scene, which
yes.
which didn't hurt at the time for me.
Right.
But that said, the book itself was so incredibly fascinating. I was going off to college at a Benedictine monastery.
Yes.
So this was, you know, and discovering
yes.
the joys of the monastic library and all
oh,
this.
Oh, my goodness,
know.
Yes.
Of course, in past weeks, we've talked about humor. So I was there looking for Aristotle's treatise on comedy, all these sorts of things. You know. But an entirely very formative book for me. And then I ended up writing as one of my history assignments. I ended up writing about the spiritual Franciscans who of course enter into the story.
Oh, we talked about novel. This once.
Yeah,
yes,
I think we talked offline about it.
Yes.
Spiritual Franciscans, you know, who were absolutely beholden by Lady Poverty, the beauty of Lady Poverty.
Yes.
As you know, kind of obviously expressed by Holy Father Francis.
Right.
And this was a rather fanatical group that said, we neither corporately nor individually can own anything. And of course, by then we're talking now the 1303. So 100 years after Holy Father Francis has died almost, they were essentially tearing the entire order apart. And this is where, what Bonaventure was working against, you know, kind of trying to head them off when he writes his definitive biography of Francis. Now I'm going to get way deep, neck deep into this, but all of this just to say that enigmatic phrase, the name of the rose.
Right.
You are actually, in expressing what you just said, for the first time, I get it now.
Is that right? Good.
It's been 25 years.
Oh, yes.
I read that. So.
But it was really echoing the point that you made. Yeah. It's true. Yes, we have to experience beauty rather than just describe it or just imagine it. It's something that is extremely true and so intimately linked to reality at its best, reality at its most full and rich quality.
For me, it's a reflection also of the meaning of the incarnation of Christ. Because, you know, the reality is, we say that Jesus Christ is the face of the Father's mercy,
right?
Of his merciful love.
Yes.
God could have just, you know, waved his anthropomorphic hand and forgiven humankind of the stain of sin, just waved it and wiped it away. But instead, he chose to become one of us, to actually enter into our physical reality such that he could be seen and touched and sensed and loved and hugged.
Yes.
And have his feet washed.
Yeah.
And have his body lovingly washed and laid in the tomb. All of this is incarnational, and it's an experience of more than just the word, I forgive you, but it's an actual reality.
Yes.
That could be expressed only in the touch.
Yes.
The incarnation.
Right.
Art and beauty are like that, right? Mm. I can tell you, Bill, I think you are you're a lovely guy, and thank you, but if I give you something like a piece of art or a handwritten note, that is more than just telling you, right?
Yes.
Don't we all appreciate in some way when we get a handwritten card?
Yeah.
Because it says, somebody took time to make this for me.
Yes.
And it's an expression that, yeah, they could have just said, but it means so much more because they've gone through the effort.
Wow. And that really adds to the experience of an appreciation for all of the natural beauties that the Lord has surrounded us with on earth and in the immense cosmos, that this is just so awesomely beautiful. He didn't just say human creatures, human sons and daughters, I love you. He showed it with every power and everything that he created.
The Book of Wisdom basically is a reflection on the beauty of wisdom.
Yes.
And it talks about the wonder of creation. In wisdom, he made the stars. In wisdom, he made, you know, we think about the mountains and the seashore and all of these things as expressions of natural beauty that lead us to the Creator. You know, for those who are open to realizing the transcendent beauty, there's the word transcendent,
yes,
transcendental again.
Yes.
Transcendent beauty of all creation leads us to reflect upon the Creator.
Yes, yeah. Well, so beauty has that very strong connection to wisdom and therefore to the intellect and to truth. And one thing that I was doing in my reflections, not reaching the
not
transcendental,
quite contemplation.
Absolutely. I was wondering if beauty is, the experience of beauty is largely an intellectual exercise or an emotional exercise or both, and probably both is a good answer, but I was also thinking of the word lovely and looking at the definitions that were available for both words, and it seemed as though lovely was a term that was more on the emotional side, whereas a beauty was a little bit more described or defined in intellectual appreciation terms. And indeed, my old buddy Chesterton, I think he said that beauty was basically a matter of perfect proportion and symmetry and
the golden mean, golden ratio,
exactly.
All
yes.
these sorts of things.
Yes, and I remember being struck by John Denver's song "Sunshine on My Shoulder." Makes me happy, and the sunshine on the water looks so lovely. And certainly through that music, he was being very emotive and showing an appreciation for beauty by calling it lovely, eliciting at that sense of love. And indeed, it was a romantic song that John Denver sang there so beautifully. I thought, I guess beauty is because I'm reacting emotionally and calling it beautiful. But what do you think? Is it more an intellectual appreciation or more an emotional appreciation that we have and should share with others, this beauty?
Well, I'm one who tends to think that beauty is an expression of emotion that gives rise to that, to an emotion in the beholder. So when we see something, so that which is beautiful is itself an expression of emotion, whether it be the divine overflowing of love or an artist's attempt to express some reaction that they have that then produces an emotion, an emotional response within the beholder. Uh-huh. Now, this emotional response can be an intellectual response. So I think the answer is truly both and.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the Catholic both and, right?
Right, exactly.
But here's the other thing about it. Once the artist creates and shares whatever their expression is, they lose all control of the emotion and the reaction that it generates. They know what they put into it.
Right.
But no artist can actually tell you how you are to read the art that they have released.
Right.
And so in that sense, I think that it is in a very similar way, again, back to the incarnation, right?
Right.
God sends his son and expresses his love for us through his son, but does not control our reaction, our acceptance or rejection.
Right. Indeed.
It is only free will. And it is a free reaction that we have to choose or to reject him.
Yes.
The same way that it is my, you know, that when I look at a piece of art, whether it be something by Robert Mapplethorpe, you know, that that could be considered, you know, offensive to people of faith.
Right.
But other people who don't have the gift of faith look at it and say, it's transgressive art. It doesn't offend me.
Yes.
The artist himself cannot control the reaction.
Yes.
And so I think in that sense, again, it's both and.
Right.
You know, this is why art critics can do what they do.
Right.
Right. They look at something and they are having a reaction that they are then expressing in an intellectual way.
Yes, that's right.
In order to maybe tell others, this is the reaction I had and you need to view it for yourself to see.
Yes.
But again, bringing it back to this idea of the incarnation being God's, you know, ultimate expression of beauty for us, of his beautiful, merciful love for humankind.
Yes.
God also respects our free will and doesn't force us. This is why the miracles didn't convince everybody.
That's right.
And still don't.
Right.
Because it's a free will reaction. And that's actually itself also a gift.
Indeed. So, well, that's a kind of the ultimate gift that makes love and all of those other transcendental things possible. We would merely be unemotive, unrealistic robots.
Automatons,
if we weren't.
Exactly,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Exactly. It's really in our free will that we are most like God.
Indeed.
I think.
Yeah.
You know, because we are free to choose, and that gives us ultimate power over our lives.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, we were created in love and can choose to react in love,
yes,
or to be selfish.
Now, I'm thinking that at least as I think back over the history of religious art, etc., it was really through these artists' willingness to let reality shine through, but be responded to with free will by the perceivers, that so much beautiful art came about, whereas I'm afraid that so often in our culture today, and you mentioned Mapplethorpe, that makes me think of this concern, namely that in a sense, when it gets to that level of, my own perception of it is one of ugliness, that mm-hmm. it's an ugly thing, mm-hmm. and that one has to think that, gee, Mapplethorpe or any artist who does that kind of art is actually intentionally robbing us of some of our free will and being manipulative by saying, I am going to be the controller of this artistic experience, and I am going to shock you. I am going to use my art to either offend you yeah. or somebody else. And so when free will disappears as an ingredient in the experience, I'm afraid that ugliness is just as likely to result as beauty.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Well, I think that's a fair read. You know, it is for the artist essentially to say, I'm going to force you to react to my art.
Right.
Which is, as you say, basically a negation of my free will
yes.
to choose whether or not I react.
Yeah.
So that would be the counterexample to what I'm, you know, to the example of the incarnation being
exactly. It is very much a counterreaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a very, very good insight.
Mm.
Yeah. And, you know, this comes back to an idea that I've thought about a lot, and that is that it is so easy for our, and by our, I mean, for people of faith, it's so easy. We essentially set ourselves up. Christ, who was meek and gentle as a lamb, and mm-hmm. we are called to be like him. When they curse us and spit us and utter every kind of falsehood against us
right.
for his sake.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? We are called to rejoice because they did that to Christ and the prophets as well.
Yes.
And to remember the Beatitudes and not to lash out.
Right.
And not to say, well, guess what, artist? I'm now going to destroy your art. I mean, I'm saying, you know, that this is to reflect deeper upon that, upon the Beatitude, upon Christ's guidance to us to say that blessed are you when they do persecute you for my name's sake.
Yeah.
You know, and to pray for those who persecute you.
Indeed.
And remember that advice as well.
Yes. And the robbing of one's free will is a terrible example of persecution.
It is.
Oppression.
And the challenge becomes, and this is the other half of what I was thinking, is that the challenge becomes when our human nature, our unredeemed human nature, or those portions, the concupiscence within us mm-hmm. reacts and we lash out at somebody and they know that I'm a Christian. Well, then what that does is it says, see, you don't really believe it.
Right.
You know, see, you really are just weak and, you know, and so that's so tough.
Yeah.
And yet this, again, it's concupiscence is what it is. It is the little chamber inside my heart that I have not yet let Christ in to heal.
Right. Well said. So. Yes. Well, I always like to tie these things back to ideas of new evangelization and
yeah.
how we can use some of these truths and qualities and joy and beauty in evangelizing to others.
Yeah.
And come to think of it, you know, we're not the only ones trying to evangelize. There are many who are trying to evangelize in the negative sense
sure.
and to kind of fill much of our popular culture and higher culture. Can I use that relative term? They're trying to fill it with some ugly things.
Alt beauty.
We can coin that, and
there it is.
I think
you heard it here first, kids.
Exactly.
Alt beauty.
Just wait for the pundits to
Bob
get a hold of that one.
And friends.
I think we've got something that's just going to be in
Breitbart's
the news.
Breitbart's going to run with this one. I just know. Is that still an outlet? Yeah. So, yes. Go ahead.
But it is an alternative that I don't want our younger generations to be toxified with, just to have their appreciation of beauty so weakened by things that are ugly, either to the mind or to the heart or simply to the eyes or to the other senses, that talk about a hardened heart, which the Lord warns against so often.
Harden not your heart.
Harden not your heart.
Psalm 95, for those of you playing along at home.
Very good. Excellent. But yes, that it's beauty that serves to unharden, to soften the heart, to make it a fleshy heart, I think, to use it.
I shall remove your hearts of stone from within you and give you fleshy hearts.
Yes.
As we hear at the Easter Vigil.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that beauty plays an important role in that, I think. And one way we can evangelize, I hope, is to expose folks to the beauty of our faith, the beauty that our faith has generated through sacred art and sacred music and all of those things. And because it is one of those things that people are longing for, even if they don't know it at the time.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I would suspect that's true. But is it in one of the epistles that St. Paul tells us to, if there is anything true or
lovely and
beautiful and kind and so all of these wonderful
Dwell on these things.
Yeah. That's the perfect prescription for hardening not your hearts. Huh.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we have to live our lives in such a way as to encourage other people to think upon those things. And it's hard sometimes in these negative days, when we are really subjected to a lot of negative commentary and a kind of a coarsened view of the world. So it's tough to seize upon the beauty and to think upon it and reflect on it. Maybe not to contemplate it transcendentally, but we're getting there.
Maybe eventually.
Eventually.
Right. Well, Bill, thank you very much for a fruitful conversation.
Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. Always important and enjoyable to think about these things that hopefully help us and help others and help the world by filling it with more beauty.
Indeed. Beautiful work. We'll see you here in studio next time.
Very good. Excellent. Look forward to it.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation. You can subscribe to hear future episodes at our website, encounterpoints.com. Our theme music is Leaves by Airtone, licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution License. We hope to encounter you in the next episode of Encounter Points.